18th, 2020. This is Deanna Spangola, and I'm broadcasting from the windy Chicago suburbs. Chicago's always been known as the Windy City, not so much for the weather, but for the political environment. Believe it or not, it snowed yesterday. Last week, I mentioned that my daffodils were starting to bloom in the front yard, as well as some other flowering bushes. There were rabbits and robins in the backyard. Anyway, it snowed yesterday, and a couple of days before that, we got a little bit of snow. Unimaginable. Anyway, I appreciate, I appreciate you joining me today at republicbroadcasting.org, and I invite you to visit and subscribe to Spangola.com and SpangolaSpeaks.net and ScreeningSandyHook.net. During the program, email questions or comments to comment@Spangola.email. I invite you to visit our chat room, Spangola.chatango.com, and I invite our guests also to visit the chat room. Today it has been 3 weeks since I last turned on my television. It has not been on 1 second since last Saturday. I'm so proud of myself. Anyway, our first guest today, excuse me, is Dr. Charles W. Page. He is a surgeon who practices in Texas. His website is charlespagemd.com. He is the author of A Spoonful of Courage for the Sick and Suffering, Transforming Your Greatest Challenges into Your Biggest Blessings. Dr. Page, welcome to the program.
Great to be here today, Deanna.
Well, I hope it's not snowing down there.
No, actually it's beautiful springtime. In East Texas, at least, we have about 3 weeks of spring, and then it gets really hot.
Oh, wow.
Well, so we're hoping that the heat keeps the coronavirus away.
Whatever that is, yes, that is all we've been hearing about. And, we're all kind of in the same boat. We're all sequestered in our homes, afraid to go out. And honestly, I am not afraid. I just think that there's a lot of overreaction. Your thoughts about that?
Well, I mean, you shouldn't be, Deanna. And so it's one of those things. It's probably, in a sense, it's a good thing you've kind of been sequestered for 3 weeks and why not watching TV. So we kind of have to take this all, you know, I think take the big picture. And so we don't need to panic about this. Once again, you know, 90% of people are going to have very, minimal symptoms with that. You know, it's that 10%, and then they're probably going to need to be admitted to the hospital, and then even a smaller percentage are going to be in the ICU. Then just that 1%, the tip of the iceberg, is, you know, the people that are going to get really sick and on ventilators. So big picture, we're going to be okay. It's just funny, so often what we hear in the media is we talk to the ICU doctors and their perspective of what they're seeing. I mean, they're seeing that 1%. The emergency room doctors, they're seeing that 10%. And so what you don't hear is the primary care doctor out, you know, in Muleshoe, Texas, or, you know, suburban Chicago, you know, that, you know, they see, you know, 5 or 6 people with COVID-19 and they treat them and, you know, we move on, you know. So I think we need to keep that in perspective.
Right, right. And I think that, of course, the media has hyped it up, and I don't think anybody should be sequestered to their homes for such a small minority of people who have it, and we really don't know, or do we know how dangerous it can be, or is it dangerous? And the other thing, is there a difference between a chest tube and a ventilator?
Oh, so well, now a ventilator is a breathing machine. We put the tube down the trachea, and we actually ventilate people.
Oh,
chest
okay.
tube is something we put to expand the lung, like if you were to have a collapsed lung. So,
got okay.
But, you know, I don't think we really have too much to worry about. Let me say this. I mean, coronavirus is real, and it's pretty bad. I mean, there are some people that it really hits, and we know the people that are most vulnerable, you know, the elderly people, people with lung disease, people who are immunosuppressed, seems to be more lethal in people who are morbidly obese. I mean, you know, people have underlying medical problems. I mean, it's bad, and I've seen, you know, even in our small town here in East Texas, I mean, we've had like 6 deaths, you know, and so we have a much higher percentage of deaths here in the underserved area that I serve than in some urban areas. So it is real, and we need to kind of, you know, I think be wise about this, but we don't need to panic. And you know, it's one of those things, Deanna. I mean, these are uncharted waters. No one really knows, you know, because of the lack of information and maybe even the cover-up we're getting from China, it's hard to know. You know, it's hard to know exactly how lethal the virus is. I mean, we've heard mortality rates anywhere from 3% to, you know, to 5%. And let me say, this is not the flu. This is much more severe than the flu. So we need to kind of keep that in mind. I mean, I don't think we need to throw the baby out with the bathwater. This morning I went to go buy my some garden stuff and I saw a patient there, and he wasn't wearing his mask, and he said, "Doc, I think this is all a hoax." And I said, "Well, yes, there is a lot of hype to this, but there's also a lot of truth." And so, you know, just good common things that they've been telling us about washing hands and keeping distance, I think those are good things to do.
Well, in Texas, I think that's something that people ordinarily do.
Yes, as opposed to Chicago. I have a son who goes to school up there, and you know, I mean, they ride the subway in Chicago, and in, you know, New York and stuff. You know, we're more commuters here in Texas. You know, and even the farther west you go, the more isolated people are out in West Texas. And so, yeah, I mean, it's a completely different lifestyle that we have, and I think that's kind of indicative of kind of where we are as far as, you know, the disease in Texas.
Right. So it is still now you say that the COVID pandemic, and that we should practice safe sex. No, we should practice safety, which we ordinarily do. People, well, at least the people I know, wash their hands, and they, you know, try to maintain good health and good health practices. I really haven't been out a lot. I did go to the post office this week, and I went, oh gosh, a couple of different places, and I was just kind of shocked by all of the paraphernalia that was put up. And I think, well, what about all these people that die of the flu each year? There seems to be more people that die of the flu than are dying of COVID-19. Is that true or no?
Well, you know, it's too early to tell, okay? And so, you know, the death rate keeps climbing in the United States, and I still feel like we're somewhere in the middle of this, you know. And if kind of the strategy that was chosen, you know, the flattening of the curve, that, you know, in the social distancing, you know, that's not going to necessarily stop the number of people who get the virus. It's just going to slow down the rate at which people get the virus, so that we don't overwhelm our resources, you know, specifically our ICUs and our ventilators and our healthcare workers. You know, I mean, I think that's the biggest resource. So I think it's too early to tell, but I think we're going to have a lot of this, probably more than we do with the flu. And you know, it's just one of those things. It's a catch-22 either way you go. I mean, we definitely know that this virus behaves different, and you know, and from what I've seen, I mean, you know, I mean, I know they talk about flu deaths, but I've never seen people in the ICU on a ventilator with the flu. You know,
right.
When I walk through the ICU on call, You know, I mean, I'm seeing, you know, 3, 4, 5 people on the ventilator with this disease. So, you know, it definitely is, it's a different virus than the typical flu virus.
Wow. Now, are they fudging the numbers? Because I understand from some of the things that I read on the internet. Now, I know that you can't always trust what you read on the internet, but that they are categorizing some deaths as COVID-19 when they're not, that they died of some other cause, and they just put down that the cause was COVID-19. Have you heard anything like that, or is that a possibility?
I have. You know, Indiana, it's one of those things. It's always in the eye of the beholder. I mean, you know, once again, as a physician, it's always sometimes I have to, you know, when I have a patient that dies, I have to list, you know, the cause of death. And sometimes all of those things are interrelated. You know, it's kind of one of those things. There's a lot of people who are dying who get the virus. And so, you know, and they're sitting on the edge of the cliff. And, you know, do they fall off the cliff or do they get the virus and the virus pushes them off the cliff? You know, I don't think anyone knows the answer to this. Let me give you a little bit different thought about this.
Sure.
And irregardless of whether it's the virus or a person's own comorbidities that they're going to die from anyway, you know, the fact that the government's going to reimburse hospitals for patients with COVID-19, I think it really makes a difference as far as our hospitals, because our medical system is really going to suffer. So, you know, in a sense, I think it's a good thing that they're maybe lumping some of these people who would probably die anyway into the COVID-19 group, you know, because I think it's going to help our hospitals, because our medical system is really going to suffer. I mean, I'll tell you, the medical system is broken. I sometimes feel like we're rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic, you know. But, you know, and so the virus is going to really affect hospitals, especially canceling, you know, all of our elective surgeries.
Oh, right. Yeah, right, because that's what is going on, and which I think is not good, because people are pretty isolated in their rooms, and I don't know. It just seems very unfortunate that there's all this ramping up of taking care of one minor segment of the population and saying to the rest of people, well, you can't come in and have your hernia operation or whatever it was that they were going to have, which they probably felt was pretty important to them. So I don't know. It's
it's one of those things. We'll always, I think we'll look back at this 10 years from now and we'll have a better answer. I mean, you know, when you're looking at something, you know, in your, not in your rearview mirror, but ahead of you, it's not a bad idea to make some plans. I mean, and the reasons why, you know, like in the state of Texas, we've canceled surgeries is because, you know, you expose people to the virus. And when you have surgery, you know, the stress of surgery, you know, kind of decreases a person's immune response, makes them more prone to infections and more prone to the virus. We use resources, and that's been the whole challenge, I think, with all of this, is trying to gather the resources that we need. So, and then if someone has a complication, you know, I mean, you know, complications don't happen a lot with surgery, but, you know, you sometimes you can operate on people, they can have a heart attack, and then they're in the ICU, and then that uses up resources. So, you know, I think at least initially, I think that was a pretty good plan. You know, it's really hurt the healthcare system, though. And, you know, it's one of those things. It was done in good faith to save lives. And so, but I am excited, too, that, you know, it looks like at least in the state of Texas, I think we're going to start slacking off on some of those restrictions that we're facing. You know, and give us a little bit more wiggle room with surgeries. It's been a challenge. I mean, I've seen people that, you know, really needed to have surgery, and there's always that now that new part in the equation in the back of my mind is, you know, should I wait or should I go ahead and do this surgery? They're going to get sick in between now and the time when this you know, when this restriction is over my head. So it's a real challenge, but I do understand the method to the madness. It's just taken a big hit on our medical system.
Who decided that this was going to be the parameters that were set? Was there a general consensus somewhere that all the hospitals should adopt this procedure, or was it each town, each city? How was that? How did that work out?
Well, so you know, of course, every state is a little bit different. You know, because each state, you know, of course, has been affected differently with the virus. Like we talked about, Chicago and New York, and it's going to be different than even Houston or, you know, where I work in rural Texas. But you know, at least for where I'm at, you know, the state of Texas has pretty much, you know, prohibited all elective surgeries. And I think that came from the CDC, from recommendations of the CDC.
Okay.
So it is coming from the government, but I do think they're giving states the leeway to tailor that to their specific issues that each states face. Like, for example, New York, who's getting hit the hardest, they're probably not going to be doing elective surgeries for a lot longer than we are here in Texas. And so, you know, one of the blessings, you know, for us is that, you know, I'm going to be able to get back to work faster. I mean, I'm a private practice physician. I'm kind of a dinosaur. I mean, I still have 6 employees, and it's been a real challenge to keep my practice afloat, not being able to do surgeries.
Whoa, yes, that's right. That is...
And it's the same with hospitals, you know. And it's interesting too. You know, we often think of underserved areas in the urban areas, like some places in Chicago or, you know, Detroit or wherever. But also in rural America, that's also an underserved area. They say, I believe, 11% of the doctors take care of like 20-25% of the population. So as far as resources, our greatest resource that we have an issue here with in rural America is, you know, doctors and surgeons and even hospitals. You know, a lot of rural hospitals are going under. They're already working in the red, and so now we're hit with the coronavirus, not able to do elective surgeries, and so you can see the impact that that's going to have on your community hospital.
Well, didn't the CDC kind of take all this into consideration, or do you think somebody was influencing the CDC for some ulterior motive?
You know, oh my goodness, that's above my pay grade. I hope our government is acting in good faith, and I really believe they are. I mean, I really don't think that they're trying to, at least here in Texas, they're not trying to impose upon all of my rights. I mean, I really think they're trying to help us, you know, protect, save lives. I mean, there is no, like I said, these are uncharted waters, and we just didn't really know how this virus was going to behave, and we didn't have good information from China. And so, you know, always... You know, the old saying, you know, we expect the worst, but we hope for the best. And it looks like, irregardless of, you know, whether this was, you know, the politics of all this, it looks like the virus is not going to be as bad as we anticipated. And that's good news.
Well, it is good news. But as I was thinking while you were talking, most people that were going to have elective surgeries probably felt or feel like if you had to have a hernia surgery or something else, it isn't elective to them if they're suffering from whatever is disturbing them. People don't just wake up one morning and say, "Gosh, I think I'm going to go have a surgery today or next week. I'm going to go talk to my surgeon and plan for something." It's not elective for somebody who is suffering from something. What about if somebody's appendix ruptured? What are some other... There are things that are perhaps not being taken care of, and people are dying because they're sequestered at home. I understand that the people who are sequestered because they are not able to go to their jobs, they're drinking more. They're maybe taking drugs or doing a lot of other things that are pretty unhealthy. Okay, we're going to go to a 3-minute break. We'll be right back.
Starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead to change the bad to good, to live in harmony.
All righty, we are back with our first guest today, Dr. Charles W. Page. And I was mentioning about some of the things that were occurring with people who were sequestered. If you lose your job and you can't afford to feed your family, and you can only go to the big box stores to get food, there's going to be a lot more health-related issues around that. Even I've heard of people committing suicide under such conditions. If you lose your job and you don't know what your future is going to hold. So go ahead.
Yeah, well, you know, at least from a medical standpoint, you know, a lot of businesses who fire their employees, of course, they lose their insurance, you know.
Oh,
and
right.
So that affects not only does that affect the patients, but that affects the doctors and the hospitals. And so there's going to be a lot of, kind of repercussions of this down the road.
Oh, absolutely. I think there probably already is. Just in walking through my neighborhood and chatting with the neighbors, it really does not look very good for people. Businesses are it's going to be fine for the Walmarts and the, as I say, the big box Amazon and some of these big operations, but what about the small shop? What about the people who have a small business? Maybe they style hair. You know, I haven't had a haircut for a while, and the lady that has been cutting my hair for the last probably 20 years, it's just her and her husband have a small business, and they're closed. What are people like that supposed to do? How healthy is that for people who have a small business? It just does not feel right. And you, how are you going to maintain your staff if you don't have any business? What are your options?
Well, so I'm applying for the small business loans, for my employees. And fortunately, I have had enough emergencies, hopefully, to be able to pay the bills, and I'm still seeing patients. I tell people I'm the best guy to see on the worst day of your life. People don't typically, like you were talking about, people just don't wake up one morning and go, hey, I'm going to go see Dr. Page. Usually they have to see me. So, and there's still those people who need to see a surgeon. But you're right. There are people that are being sequestered and they're having late presentations because of their fear of the coronavirus. So, it's one of those things. We're going to do our best to keep going, and, we're going to have to be innovative. And one of the things I've started doing is, I've always kind of wanted to do more writing and do more radio interviews, and this has given me the opportunity to do that. So,
I'm not paying you to do different things. I'm not paying you to be on this program. RBN isn't paying you. I don't know whether you've been misled or something, but
here's the other thing. Yeah, we always joke about medicine. We're working ourselves into poverty, and now I'm doing some writing and speaking, and it seems like I'm not doing very well either. In fact,
right,
we're giving away our books for free on Amazon.
Exactly, your book is for free. So how are you going to feed your family if you're under these conditions?
Well, that's a good That's a good question. We're just going to keep going. I mean, you know, fortunately, I think here in the next couple weeks, Texas is going to start lifting some of those restrictions. I'm going to be able to do more surgeries and kind of get back into the groove of things. You know, I think the small, you know, I think Trump's small business loans are really going to save our life. You know, as far as my small business, and so.
Do you think the politicians are still getting their paychecks?
Yes, I do.
You think the people over at the CDC are still getting their paychecks?
Yes, I do, and I think that, and you know, also I think that you know the people that you know work for the hospital, the doctors that are employees. I mean, they're still getting the paycheck. So, yeah, it's a crazy time.
Well, I just think. What about some of the hospitals that we've heard about hospitals in New York saying, "Oh my gosh, we're just overstaffed, and we're just, you know, or not overstaffed. We're overwhelmed with all these patients and all these people coming in," and that is the time to say, "Okay, show us some film of all these patients coming in with COVID-19. Show us how busy the hospitals are. Tell us where these hospitals are, and we'll go take some pictures." Now, I've seen on the internet where the doctors and the nurses they don't have enough to do, so they're dancing and prancing out in the hallway, and they don't have any patients at all.
Yeah,
so
you know, it's kind of funny. It depends upon your specialty. You know, for example, you know, I'm a surgeon. There's no elective surgeries. I'm doing emergencies, so I'm not doing a lot of those things. Now, the pulmonary critical care doctors and the internists and the hospitalists, they're being worked really hard. Yeah, so it does vary. So the anesthesia guy who's out dancing, they're not busy, you know, because they're not doing cases.
Right. So that puts a lot of people out of work, and the people who do have a job are the ones that are taking care of the COVID-19 patients. And yet if there's only one or two or three in a small hospital and 2,000 or 3,000 other people are going without hospital care, you know, I just have to ask the question, is that, That seems really wrong to me to put all these people out of work and out of business for a few people who might or might not have a severe illness. I guess I'm really ticked off.
Well,
you're not ticked off. I'll be ticked off for you. We do have a quick break. I'll be right back. We'll be right back. First guest today, and that is Dr. Charles W. Page, and he is a surgeon who used to have surgeries in Texas, but he's just kind of with the rest of us, not able to work.
Yep, but you know, making the best of the situation that I'm in, and trying to. You know, do some more writing and spend more time with my family. I did go out today and get some vegetables for my garden, which I know is quite a big topic if you haven't noticed on the news. So, you know, in Texas, we're able to go get our tomato plants and plant them. And so, but making the best of the situation that we're in. And, you know, I think hopefully in the next month or so, things are going to get back to normal, and I'm hoping that, you know, there's going to be a backlog of surgeries, you know, and I'll be able to make up for the losses.
Wow, but a month. Some people live paycheck to paycheck. And in Texas and in other places, I'm sure gardens are allowed, or I'm sure they're allowed in most places, but for instance, I don't have a garden. I always have gardened, but I don't currently have a garden. And with the stores not restocking their shelves, people are going to get very desperate. And when people get desperate, the crime rate goes up. And people who are desperate do desperate things. They have a tendency to commit suicide and jump out of windows and take it out on their families. Children are going to suffer. It's really, there are a lot of people who are in good circumstances financially, and they can weather the storm. But those people, and I think I'm talking about the majority of Americans, live from paycheck to paycheck. There's a lot of credit debt. People run up their credit cards because, well, since they introduced credit cards and since people are so much into immediate gratification, it's pretty easy to run up your credit card. How are these people going to manage who were just barely making it anyway without feeling desperate and jumping out of a window?
Well, I resemble that statement. You know, I'll tell you, you know, we all face challenging circumstances in life. And, you know, I think what's important is how we respond to those circumstances. And, you know, it's really kind of made me take a step back and think about, you know, how I'm spending. You know, I mean, I have also have 5 kids. I have 2 kids in college. I mean, I've got a lot of expenses. You know, but just taking a step back and, you know, looking at our budget and, you know, doing the things that our parents, you know, kind of told us to do, you know, save money and stuff. I think it'll be good in the long run. It's going to be tough, you know. I mean, it's going to be tough for a lot of us because you're right. We do. We live on credit. And but I think we can learn from our mistakes. We can fall forward and we can keep going. And so, you know, that's kind of one of the things that I've, you know, kind of written about, you know, is that, you know, I've seen people just really face difficult challenges and they've learned how to, you know, transform them into blessings. And so it can be done. It's not easy, you know. I mean, but we have to, you know, have faith and courage.
I think that we should make demand that the politicians give up their paychecks. Because obviously they have not been protecting the people that they're supposed to be representing. See, I'm really ticked off about this whole thing. I see the mayor of Chicago. I don't live in Chicago. I live in the suburbs. But all these mayors are still getting their paychecks. They're making demands on the public. When this thing first started, before I stopped watching TV, I saw the governor and his pals and the mayor of Chicago and a bunch of people on TV, and they were having a press conference, and they were all clustered together, and I'm thinking, what the heck is this all about? He's telling everybody in the country, or everybody in Chicago, everybody in Illinois, you know, safe distance, protect yourself, and they're all in a big cluster hanging out, probably like what they've always done. And I don't think there's a darn bit of difference between the Democrats and the Republicans. They're just there to make you think that you have a choice. And which is what the situation that we're in now, we think, gosh, we don't have a choice. We can either take what they're doing to us, or we can say, darn it, give up your paycheck first. If you got us into this mess, and you're asking us to do these things, then you do it first. I'm pounding my desk. I'm sorry. I'm really ticked off.
Wow. Well, yes. You got to understand. I mean, I'm from I live in Nacogdoches, Texas. I mean, we've been having revolutions for independence here before the Alamo, you know?
Right.
So yes, I get it. You know, and hopefully you know, hopefully if Trump gets elected, and I think he's going to get elected, you know, I think hopefully he'll have some term limits and have some things to at least begin to kind of let the pendulum swing back towards some more accountability for our politicians. Yeah, it's a big concern. I mean, they definitely don't live like the rest of us.
No, right. My goodness. And this all happened under his term. I'm thinking, wow, this is amazing. And now we've got Bill Gates demanding that everybody get vaccinated and chipped, and you can't go anywhere unless you're chipped. Well, who allowed him to have such a big voice in this? I mean, who the heck is Bill Gates anyway? And is he in control of the World Health Organization? Are he and Trump collaborating on this? I don't see Trump as being any big hero.
Well,
because this happened under his watch. I'm thinking,
none of us are perfect, and yes, we have had a especially in the last month or so, we've had a lot of our rights taken away, and it'll be interesting to see what happens after the coronavirus. It'll be interesting to see how, and as citizens, we need to be watchful of that. You know, I mean, right now I have an obstetrician and a committee deciding, you know, whether my surgeries are elective or non-elective, you know, or elective or emergent.
Oh, my gosh. Right. And, so, who made that decision before he got chosen? You did.
I did.
Well, of course. And the patient did. The patient had a right to say, hey, I want my hernia fixed, or I want my whatever he wanted out or put in or whatever. That was up to the patient. And patients have rights. Doctors
well, and
have
they
rights.
Do, but we need to realize, and just thinking about our Constitution, this is the way I see it. My old civics teacher, Miss Birdwell, used to say, you know, that rooted in the Constitution is not just our rights, but that we would be responsible, that we would think about other people, you know. And so, you know, rights and responsibilities, and, you know, yes, we have the rights. The Constitution gives us the rights to have those kind of liberties, but, you know, also we need to consider, you know, the welfare of others above our own, you know. And so I think in this particular case, you know, I think knowing that there are going to be people that are going to be dying from this, and, you know, I think a lot of the decisions that are being made are good, sound decisions. I'm hoping, and I think that once this is all over, we'll get those liberties back, and I believe we will. I mean, I believe, you know, once again, with President Trump, you know, it's a rock and a hard place, you know, and decisions had to be made, and so decisions were made to protect lives over liberty. And, you know, but I'm confident that, you know, Trump will let the pendulum swing back and give us back our liberties. But I do see that there are some people that are, you know, making grabs for power, you know. And I think as citizens of the United States, you know, we have a responsibility to, you know, step in there if we don't get those rights back.
Well, I just think that the politicians do not have the right to take constitutional rights from us. The Constitution supposedly guarantees a certain liberties, certain things, and they're not representing the people. Do you think the people went to their representatives and said, hey, we would like to be laid off our jobs, and we would like to not be able to buy food when we need it, and we don't want our children going to school because they might catch a cold or something, but could you help us out here? And we didn't do this to ourselves. The politicians have done something to us that is irreconcilable, that they had no right to do to us, and they have destroyed lives. They will destroy more lives and destroy the economy in such a way that I don't think that it'll ever recover to the point that it was at, because more people are going to die from the sequestering than are going to die from COVID-19. I think this is the worst tragedy that has ever, that Americans have ever encountered, and it happened under Trump's jurisdiction. So I've not been a Trump fan. I'm just not a I'm not a big fan, and it happened under his watch. And he's supposed to be protecting the country, and our representatives are supposed to be representing us. I didn't ask any of my representatives to do this and say, hey, why don't you sequester everybody and make everyone lose their jobs? Wouldn't that be a great idea? But go ahead and take your paycheck. So I'm really ticked off about this whole thing. And I'm sorry, I don't mean to take it out on you.
Well, And yes, I would say that, you know, but here's the reality of the situation. Who would you support? Would you want Bernie Sanders to be our president?
I'll tell you what, Trump has done more than Bernie Sanders could have accomplished. He's done what Bernie Sanders would have loved to have done, and he's done it with the applause of a lot of people. I think, what the heck? Really, he's done what Bernie Sanders wished he could have done. And then you have this crazy guy that Trump is obviously going to get reelected, because the Democrats have no one to put in there except somebody that's, well, who knows what this Epstein's buddy. I don't know. I'm just really ticked off, and I'm sorry to take it out on you.
I understand your frustration. I mean, I think we all kind of have that looming in the back of our mind. What's going to happen to our rights?
What's going to happen? It's already happened. We have lost the ability to leave our house without having a damn mask on our face. I'm sorry. I don't mean to cuss, but. That is insane. You have to wear a mask to go to the post office. I was so upset. See, I hadn't been out and about. I'm pretty much got everything I need right here. But then when I went to the post office and I came back, and I also went to the UPS office. Oh my gosh, because I had something to return to Amazon, and I just like to take care of stuff like that. And the policies that they had set up at the UPS office and the policies at the post office, I came back. I was so upset. I was so mad that when my son called that night, we had this long talk, and I was just livid. And I'm still livid. I haven't gotten over it. I'm livid. This is not right. This is an economic assault on the country. We're never going to get back what we have lost. And we've lost it under the jurisdiction of Trump, period. And Bernie Sanders couldn't have done a better job. Trump out-Trumped him. So I'm just ticked off.
We will see. But, you know, but it's also up to us. You know, we play a role in that.
Okay.
You know, as citizens, you know, we play a role in that too, and we can, you know, we have a voice.
Oh, really?
I think so.
Those voices are still getting paychecks. Are you still getting a paycheck? No.
No, but I have a voice. I'm talking with you today. I may be broke, but I still have a voice. So we still have, you know, we still have. You know, we still have some options left, and it can always be worse, you know.
No, it can't always be worse. See, you and I are talking. You're not getting paid. I'm not getting paid. I'm just ticked off. We don't have a voice. I'm not getting paid to do this. I'm not paying you to be on the radio program. I'm on this radio program. I love being on RBN. I love it. I appreciate them. They're fabulous. I love RBN. They have allowed me almost 10 years of telling people when you know something, you have an obligation to share it. And I don't think we're ever going to get those rights back. It's just not. Once something is taken from you, they're not going to say, "Oh, by the way, we're going to let you out of your house again. We're going to let you take off your mask. We're going to let you go to the store. We're going to help all those small businesses come back." They don't have enough money. What are they going to do? Print more money? I'll be right back. This is Deanna, and our guest is Dr. Charles W. Page. His website is charlespagemd.com, and he is the author of A Spoonful of Courage for the Sick and Suffering, Transforming Your Greatest Challenges into Your Biggest Blessings. I'm sorry, I kind of got carried away, but I just... You know, Trump said that he was going to drain the swamp. And it seems like he has some of the same swamp monsters that have served in all the previous administrations. He certainly has, well, Fauci and Birx, B-I-R-X. Fauci was collaborating with Obama. And Clinton, and who knows who else. And what about Bill Gates? He seems to own the World Health Organization. And it just really is really maddening. And until they can do a better job, why should we be paying for their flights to jet home for the weekend or all their other nonsense while we are really, while the general population is suffering? I don't see the politicians suffering in the least. I think that they should be the first people to give up their paychecks. If they can't represent us any better than what they're doing, they don't deserve to be in the position they're in. But politicians, they had big lobbyists put hand in the money. Big pharma gives them a lot of money. That they have probably 10 lobbyists from big pharma seeing them every day. I'm just ticked off. I'm sorry, I took it out of you.
And hopefully we're going to see some reform here in the next 4 years. I'm hoping that happens. And, you know, it's funny, it's true with bureaucracies. One thing that I'm really, as a doctor, you know, I mentioned, you know, we've been rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic. I mean, we really have a broken system. And I'm hoping that, you know, people will see, you know, the problems that we have in medicine and be able to change some of those medicines, be able to change some of those problems, kind of drain the swamp, as the coronavirus continues and as people begin to kind of see all the issues that we're facing right now.
Yes. What do you think about a vaccine?
First of all, it's going to take about a year to get probably a good vaccine. And, you know, we don't want to get too, it's one of those things, if you push a vaccine, a lot of times you can have a lot of problems. So, you really want to go through the trials of the vaccine because there can be a lot of side effects with them. So we have to go kind of slow with that.
Well, how come Bill Gates didn't vaccinate his children? How come he wants us to all take a vaccine, and yet he wasn't willing to he's not willing to take his own vaccine, I'll bet.
Yeah,
I think he should be the first person to take his vaccine. Of course, it'll probably be saline solution, like they did on TV when somebody said, oh, I'm going to take, one of the presidents got on TV and he said, yeah, I'm going to take the flu vaccine. It was probably saline solution. I don't trust the politicians, none of them. They lie. That's what politicians are, politicians slash liars. And we're suffering for their lies and for their lack of representation. But, Doctor, thank you. Thank you for being on my program. Bless your heart for
you know, it's been great. Yes. And I think we've all got some anger right now. And is that stewed up anger for me? Who knows? But I would just encourage you, you know, keep doing what you're doing. I mean, this is a good show, and we have a voice, and we can't do everything, but we can do some things, and yeah. And so just keep talking, keep writing, and you know, talking to your representatives, and vote.
Okay, thank you so much, Doctor, for being on the program.
Absolutely, it was a pleasure.
Thank you. Take care. Bye bye.